This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's time for our annual 10 Best Show, in which our film critic David Edelstein and our rock critic Ken Tucker present their lists and review the year. We'll start with David Edelstein. We asked him to also give us a roundup of the movies in theaters for the holidays. Welcome, David. Well, in a few moments, we're going to get to your 10 best list. But first, you're going to talk with us about holiday movies. So I thought we could start with a film that appears on both lists. It's a film opening for the holidays that's actually at the top of your 10 best list. And the film is Munich, directed by Steven Spielberg and written by Tony Kushner, who also wrote the play Angels in America. So what makes this film your favorite of the year?
Well, my passion since becoming a film critic and also my bugaboo has been the vigilante, vengeance, revenge, retaliation genre, call it what you will. I find it incredibly seductive, you know, to see movies in which there is an injury against somebody and then the hero goes out and busts some heads and gets a piece of his own back. Now, I believe that this is a sort of horrible thing for us to cheer on. At the same time, I understand that we're all very vulnerable to it, which brings us to Munich, which is very specifically about retaliation. It's the story of a secret force organized by the Mossad that retaliates for the massacre of 11 athletes at the 72 Olympics. And it constantly wrestles, the script by Tony Kushner constantly wrestles with the issue of what retaliation accomplishes. Is it vital to attack one's foes? Does it create peace in the long run, or does it breed more violence and destroy the people and the countries that practice it? I think it's a remarkable film. It has you sort of whipped up by the assassinations that these people carry out, and at the same time, kind of conscience stricken at the fact that these are human beings with their own vital beliefs.
I know there's some controversy surrounding the film. I believe the members of the Israeli government haven't been very pleased with it. What's the controversy about?
Well, I mean, if I were the Israeli government, I wouldn't be too pleased with it either, insofar as it does not portray the Palestinians as evil. And so this is the kind of a revenge movie with a conscience. People may feel who believe in retaliation, who believe that it is vital for a nation state to strike back when it is injured, may feel that the movie is sort of skewed to the kind of peacenik side. I'm used to a cinema in which revenge is so much a part of, you know, of the vocabulary of movies that I think this kind of movie is a tonic and is a vital corrective. And it's also, you know, Spielberg's often concerned with absent fathers and you know, the lack of the moral reassurance that they can provide. And here the protagonist's father is a distant presence. He's never shown. The surrogate father is an Israeli Mossad agent played by Jeffrey Rush, who is, you know, unreliable in the extreme. So the entire world is presented as without a sane moral center. And I don't know, as far as I'm concerned, it's an extraordinarily realistic and balanced portrait.
Two new musicals have opened for the holidays. Rent opened for Thanksgiving and is still in many theaters. And The Producers is opening for the holidays. Both of these were very successful on Broadway. The Producers was a phenomenon, and Rent was heralded as like reviving the musical for a new generation. So what are the movie versions like?
Well, it's not a great season for musicals. Rent, look, I know Rent has, you know, many, many passionate admirers on Broadway, and I know that, you know, it is a very moving story of how the composer, Jonathan Larson, wrote it shortly before he died, before he could see the great commercial success that it was going to achieve. I think as directed by Chris Columbus, it's sort of like a new ride at Disney World, you know, the urban AIDS victim jamboree, which I found, I don't know, kind of icky, I guess. Every time somebody opens their mouth with one of the show-stopping songs, everybody else joins in. And so on one level, you're inspired by the communal spirit, by the way people pull together in the face of tragedy. On the other hand, there's very little drama. And it even borders on the saccharine, even with all these people dying of AIDS. As for The Producers, that's just excruciating. That's The movie, directed by Susan Stroman, is pitched to the second balcony, and she just transplanted it from Broadway with all that retro Queenie, you know, camp stuff intact. And I found the performance is just, for the most part, really horrible.
Well, you know, The Producers was a movie that got made into a Broadway musical that got transferred back to the world of movies again. So you don't think that this movie measures up to the original movie?
Well, the original was certainly in your face, but you had this extraordinary force of nature, Zero Mostel, and you had this extraordinary performance by Gene Wilder. You know, this was our sort of introduction to his peculiar kind of hysterical, etherized delivery that was, you know, and they were an absolutely beautiful match. Here you have Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick, who are both basically on the same plane of reality. Matthew Broderick hasn't scaled down his performance one bit for the stage. He's popping his eyes. He's very much a cartoon. And Nathan Lane just doesn't have the, you know, he's fun to watch on stage, but he doesn't have the subtext, the layers. When you look at his face on screen, there's really not much to see.
Woody Allen has a new film, Match Point, that's opening in New York and L.A. for the holidays, and then will open in the rest of the country later. Everyone who I hear mention this film starts it by saying the same thing. They express their surprise that it's a good Woody Allen movie. So do you think it's good, too, and are you surprised?
Well, you know, it's the depressing thing about the last few years, maybe the last 20 years, is kind of watching Woody Allen sort of sink deeper into his own kind of insular misanthropy, and, you know, basically not kind of the sense that he was writing and directing a movie a year at least, but nothing was coming in anymore. He was just reshuffling the same old themes. Match Point is basically the same old things. It's crimes and misdemeanors transported to England. I mean, I'm talking pretty literally here. But the great thing is that it doesn't look or sound or feel like any other Woody Allen movie, which makes it pretty inspiring. It's very smoothly made. There's a ton of suspense, which is really unusual. It's got, you know, wonderful performances by an actor who's never impressed me, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, and Scarlett Johansson. It's got this air of very ambiguous sexuality to it. In some ways, it's a more successful movie than The Talented Mr. Ripley, sort of working on with many of the same themes. I mean, what the problem is that you get Woody Allen's kind of sophomore existentialism and atheism thrown in. You know, if you commit a crime and God doesn't punish you, then there's no God. Okay, you know, whatever. Okay. Well, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if there's a God or not, but, you know, I'm not going to take Woody Allen's word for it because, you know, the police don't pick up somebody who's committed a crime.
What are some of the other movies that you'd recommend for the holidays?
Well, there's a wonderful movie called Transamerica with Felicity Huffman, a stage actress who also has scored a hit recently on Desperate Housewives. It's about a man on the brink of a final sex change operation who learns he has a son. It's sitcom stuff, but it's not played like a sitcom. And at the same time, it's hugely entertaining. And Felicity Huffman is so great. I mean, she's playing a man becoming a woman. And it's kind of like she deconstructs and reconstructs a woman before your eyes. Her movements and her gestures as a woman are almost convincing, but they're always kind of like a beat off. I hesitate to use the word because it sounds pretentious, but it's a true Brechtian performance, and it's absolutely delightful.
And is there a movie or two that you'd recommend we avoid for the holidays?
Well, apart from the Producers, The New World is a great disappointment. I know everybody loves the cult director Terrence Malick. This is the fictionalized story of John Smith and Pocahontas. It's sort of like Brokeback Wigwam. The lovers can't build on their elemental passion. It's also the same theme that Malick used in The Thin Red Line. We begin in Eden, we go to hell, we return to Eden. It's very self-consciously lyrical, very meditative, and, you know, at 2.5 hours, absolutely stultifying.
Okay, David, it's that special time of the year, time for me to ask you to present your 10 best list.
Terry, this 10 best list, you ain't going to see this anywhere else. First of all, I cheated like mad since I have two double features here. I always have a terrible time because I love movies and I love even crap movies. And this year there were just a million movies that I really adored. But here it is. Number one is, of course, Munich, which I've already talked about. Number two is Junebug, an extraordinarily ambiguous film about the North-South divide. I don't think it gels, but I haven't seen a film that tantalizing in a long time. My number three is Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. That's just one that everybody I know agrees on. It's pure bliss. It's part Ealing comedy, part Hammer horror movie. It's witty. It's loving. It's an absolute must-see, with or without the kids. My fourth favorite movie of the year is Miranda July's debut feature, Me and You and Everyone We Know. Some people regard this as very performance arty and self-indulgent, but I actually think it's an amazing distillation of the culture, of a culture in which young people today, young people, are floating in their own bubbles and struggling to connect in all kinds of weird and perverse ways. Number five is going to be slightly controversial, and that's another Spielberg movie, War of the Worlds. A lot of critics were appalled that Spielberg would use imagery that invokes 9/11 in what they thought of as a popcorn entertainment. But I think it's a really serious movie and very disturbing. And I also believe that even big-budget summer sci-fi movies are supposed to confront national traumas. And I don't find even a whiff of exploitation in what Spielberg does in this film. My first double bill, number six, is what I call my Shakaruni double bill. And that's The Aristocrats and Sarah Silverman, Jesus's Magic. These are two movies that center on how far you can go in the bad taste scatological department. And I don't know what they amount to, but I laughed my head off. The Aristocrats deconstructs a disgusting joke and tells you a lot about our taboos and about the kinds of people who are in business to flout them. The Sarah Silverman movie, Silverman, her persona on stage, it's like a pipeline to the id of the sort of over-entitled, solipsistic, materialistic, prejudiced, insensitive, and oversexed American upper-middle-class female. And I thought it was absolutely revelatory. My number seven movie is The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada, which is Tommy Lee Jones' directorial debut. It's a very leisurely, widescreen Western. It's a little sentimental in its construction, but that sentiment is really cut by the ghoulish humor involving the dead man's corpse, which sort of decays progressively in front of your eyes and kind of throws the nobility of the whole thing into question. My eighth favorite movie is Grizzly Man, Werner Herzog's documentary about a man eaten by bears. And that's a case where the subject's personality and the director's personality just dovetail insanely well. Both figures are kind of self-dramatizing, a little scary. And yet the movie is kind of a profound lesson in the limits of loving nature. Number nine is my second double bill, and it's what I think of as underpraised genre films. These are movies that, you know, I think got really short shrift from critics because they just came from disreputable or B genres. Skeleton Key and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Skeleton Key is a horror movie, very unsung. Maybe the last feature we'll see from New Orleans before the flood really captures the place and the surrounding countryside. It turns on a history of racial injustice, on gris-gris, you know, the local voodoo, on revenge. It's an almost bottomless pit of horror. And there are great performances by Jenna Rollins and Kate Hudson. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is Shane Black's very jokey film noir with kind of a surprising kick and a great leading man turn by Robert Downey Jr. My last film is one that was very hard to put on my list because I found it absolutely unbearable. And I don't ever want to see it again. It's called Nobody Knows. It's directed by the Japanese director Hirokazu Koreeda. It's the true story of a single mother who abandoned her children for large stretches, and about how they manage to pull together and somehow cope, even though there's a very tragic turn near the end. I don't think I'll shake this movie off for the rest of my life. And, you know, I recommend it very guardedly, but it's haunting and it's profound, and it's a great humanistic work of art.
In this end-of-the-year wrap-up, can we put in a good word for George Clooney and his film Good Night and Good Luck and his performance in Syriana?
We certainly can. You know, I find it really exciting that that Clooney is a guy who not only wants to be a big star, a sort of Cary Grant-like star, but he also wants to be a very conscientious force for change in this country. He's throwing his weight behind some very exciting projects. Good Night and Good Luck was somewhat fictionalized, but nevertheless rather pertinent parable about threats to free expression. You know, not one of my favorite movies of the year, but extraordinarily powerful and well-made. Syriana, I found, you know, borderline incoherent, but, you know, I admire the hell out of the attempt to sort of connect all these different threads to account for where we are in the Persian Gulf and kind of the origins of terrorism. And yes, you're right. I mean, I think there was, I know he went through hell, you know, with his weight gain, but I think he gives a kind of a naked performance in that film that we haven't seen from him since the very underrated Steven Soderbergh film Solaris. He really is an extraordinary actor, as well as being, you know, a kind of true American successor to Cary Grant.
David, what were some of your favorite performances of the year?
There were so many. I wish I were one of those, you know, radio guys who gives the little disclaimers at the end of commercials so I could just go Upside of Anger, Joan Allen, Walk the Line, Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon, Capote, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Squid and the Whale, Jeff Daniels and Jesse Eisenberg, Dark Water, another underrated genre film, Jennifer Connelly and John C. Reilly, Heath Ledger, Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort. Oh, what a scary performance, even when his features were only half formed in the primordial slime. Diane Keaton, Viggo Mortensen and Maria Bella and William Hurt and Ed Harris in History of Violence, Amy Adams and Junebug, A Kid in Mysterious Skin, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Donald Sutherland, Keira Knightley, everyone in Pride and Prejudice, Mickey Rourke in Sin City, and Bill Murray.
Let me express my pleasure that you're not that kind of guy.
But I want to get everyone in because I love them all and I wish they all could get awards. They all get Davids, if not Oscars.
What messages do you think that the film industry is going to take away from this year, from its successes and failures?
You're going to see more and more so-called niche marketing. Thank God, you know, people no longer, I hope, it's also a matter of actors lowering their salaries. You know, people putting smaller amounts of money and, you know, not as dependent on the sort of blockbuster receipts. The other thing that Hollywood is obsessed with right now is, issues of sort of privacy in the new media. For advanced critic screenings in New York, they practically do a cavity search when you go in, you know, and sometimes you can't even concentrate on the movie because there are these huge guys in the front staring at you with these night vision goggles. You know, you're afraid to pick your nose. And
but they're making sure you don't have recording
they're
equipment
making sure
so that
you haven't brought in cameras.
The movie.
Oh, you have to turn in, you know, any cell phone that has a camera. You have to turn in your laptops. You know, they go through your pockets. I'm not joking. And they're just afraid that people are going to get these and they're going to put them on the Internet. And, you know, more and more we're going to actually be watching movies on the Internet. So I don't think the fear is unfounded, you know. And more and more we're going to find ourselves living in a very private culture. You know, movies delivered to homes via DVD, cable, the Internet. One very well-known exhibitor is trying to close the three-month window between theatrical and video releases so that you can go to the theater or buy a movie simultaneously. I really, really hate that idea. But then I know I'm in a pretty rarefied position getting to see every movie that comes out, and not everybody is quite so lucky. But, you know, I think the loss of public exhibition and of the thrill of, you know, sitting with other people and responding as one to a great movie, it's something I grew up with. It's something I want my kids and my kids' kids to grow up with. It's something that I think makes this such a thrilling medium and so different from television.
Well, David, I want to wish you happy holidays, and thanks for talking with us about the movies of the year.
Terry, it's always a joy.
David Edelstein is Fresh Air's film critic, and he's film critic for Slate.